Tricky.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to the Gren Hill Chronicles podcast. I am Don Bishop, writing as T.S. Pedramon, and I am here today with Terry Mixon.
Mixon, M-I-X-O-N, not Nixon.
Nope. I have met so many people over the past week. So you can see, if you're watching us on YouTube, you can see we're in a different setting. I'm not in my basement office. We're squatting in a conference session room.
Don't tell anyone. They'll come and kick us out.
You can see our lanyards. This is at the end of 20 Books Vegas. I've talked about 20 Books before, so any consistent listener knows what I'm talking about. A conference for independent authors, and it's been a busy week, and we'll talk more about that later. But right now, as we speak, the Rave, the Reader and Author Vegas event, is still ongoing in the main, what do you call that room?
I guess it's the Grand Ballroom.
Or I think they call it the Event Center.
Or so be that too.
The Horseshoe Event Center.
We can call it what we want to call it. They're not going to come after us.
And I got pictures with Larry Correa and Steve Diamond. And I got a picture yesterday with Todd McCaffrey, and I got an autographed book from him today. A few other things. Mr. Mixon?
You can call me Terry.
Terry? All right, Terry. What is your background? Tell us.
You go back far enough, I served in the U.S. Army back in the 80s. I was a helicopter crew chief on scout helicopters with the 101st Airborne Division. I got out of the service and got a two-year degree in computers and got hired by NASA to work on computers in the Mission Control Center.
You said scout helicopters. Mm-hmm. What model?
I'm OH-58.
Okay. I'm not a huge aficionado, OH-58.
The Charlie models, if you want to get specific.
Okay. Some fans out there will appreciate that. I appreciate it, but I don't know what you're talking about. I know what an Osprey is, and I know what...
You see the news helicopters all flying around that all have that particular look? The Bell Jet Rangers?
I don't know.
The OH-58 is the military version of the Bell Jet Ranger.
Okay. Okay. So then you worked for NASA?
I did, for 16 years as a computer guy.
Computers, okay.
I worked in the Mission Control Center, and I still live in that general area.
I talked to, I've had another guest who was a programmer. I'm bad with names. Forgive me. We talked about Conlang. I don't remember. It's like 4 episodes ago, but
that's okay. It's fine. I don't remember what I had for breakfast.
Yeah. Okay. Worked for NASA for 16 years.
16 years.
That's cool. Do you live in Houston?
I live just south of Houston.
Okay. I was born in Houston.
My apologies and condolences to you, sir.
It's a good town. I liked it.
Which part of Houston?
Well, I was born in Herman Hospital, but I don't know where we lived at that point. But then we moved to Utah, and then a few years later we moved back, and I spent my elementary school years on the north side, Jersey Village.
Yeah. I know where that is. We live in the south side in a town called Leak City, just over the Galveston border.
Yeah. Actually, so, we moved to Dallas when I was 10, and I grew up, and I went to a year of college, and I did a 2-year mission, and I went back to college. But after my mission, before going back to college, I worked a summer in pest control, and I spent 2 months as a pest control technician in Houston. And so I loved being back in Houston, and it was kind of a good little reunion for my heart. And I drove all over. So League City, Bay City, Sugarland, it was good.
The only thing I don't like is the summer weather where it's and humid. I can deal with the hot, but not have the humid, but hey, you know, you got what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us about your books.
I have written 40 books. most of them myself, some co-authored. I wrote the Empire of Bones saga, which is my own series, one of my own series.
Okay.
And I started that sucker off while I was still employed at NASA because I saw the layoffs coming. I had the longest layoff notice in history. They gave me notice, you're going to be laid off in 3 months. Then they extended it 3 months. Then they extended it 3 months. It ended up being almost a year and a half with me knowing the end was coming. And so I said, I'm just going to go ahead and try to write these books and get them out there. Three of them published before the layoff happened and managed to make the jump to full-time writing.
Okay. Sorry, I keep trying to remember to...
Look at the camera?
Look at the camera a little bit. Hi, we're still here. Yeah, as long as I'm around, it's going to be awkward. So sorry for that. But okay. So you did you say you started your first book while you were...
I published three books in the first series while I was still at NASA. And this book...
What year was this?
2014.
2014. Okay.
So the series itself is space opera with military elements. Society that survived after the fall of the Terran Empire.
Okay.
They don't really know what destroyed it because they lost so much during the destruction. And the story is the exploration of dead empire to try to find out what exactly happened there and finding out that it's not quite as dead as they thought it was.
So what's the, where's the political seat in this series? If it's not the Terran Empire, like where are these people from?
I named a world Avalon.
Okay.
And so they're from that. They're way
extrasolar.
They're way off.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cause you mentioned the death of the Terran Empire. Made me think of Red Rising. Have you read that?
No, I have not.
I listened to the Red Rising trilogy. And there's more after the three books, but I only half listened to the fourth one. I didn't care as much. But in that franchise, the seat of government for the solar system. So in that franchise, the society is still only within our solar system. It's a little bit more realistic like that, but then again, they have grav boots and, you know, but, and it takes months to go between planets if they're far away.
Yeah.
But the seat of government and the center of society is on Earth's moon.
Yeah.
Because centuries before this takes place, those who were working and living on the moon rebelled against Earth. So anyway, yeah, you mentioned that and I think it's really interesting to have, I don't know. It's kind of like a detail like that. You picture humanity going out into the galaxy, and you imagine Earth is still being our center, but that's not the case. You know,
it's not the case. By the time they finally get to it, books and books and books down the way, it's basically a devastated wasteland where the enemy that destroyed the empire destroyed all the major cities using kinetic bombardment, and all that's left of humanity on the greatest homeworld of humanity are nomadic barbarians basically living in the wreckage that's been left behind.
Okay. Well, cool.
The other series that I write is The Last Hunter that I write for Variant Publishing with J.N. Cheney as the co-author.
Okay.
And it is much more military-oriented, and it's fighting off an invasion of robotic aliens and then the aliens that sent them and trying to hold the Confederation against forces that they are ill-prepared to deal with.
Did you notice we scratched our faces in unison?
I did not notice.
It was kind of funny.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
But no, I got the idea for that story from watching... the movie Battleship, and then where they take the ancient battleship and they take it to war against the aliens. I said, I could do something like that. So the main warship is a battleship that's hundreds of years out of date and is a museum, and they have to take it to war.
I appreciate like not just you, but I've been surprised how many military or ex-military people I've met at this convention this week. So I appreciate that there's somebody with a military background writing something military oriented, because a lot of the time when I read or watch something, it's really clear that it was written by somebody who does not have a military background. And then even when it is, or when they've heavily consulted with somebody, and this is just me, but some things will bug me, where it's like, that's not how it would happen. Or,
yeah.
But then again, I have to remind myself that I don't know everything. And my experience is not representative of all, like my 2010s U.S. Marine Corps experience is not the case of all U.S. Marine Corps experience, let alone all U.S. military experience. And so, like me, 11 years ago, coming fresh out of boot camp and having the drill instructors just, not physically, but pound into us how we are supposed to behave as young Marines. So I left boot camp, actually. I left boot camp, went through Marine combat training for a month, and then I went to my MOS school, and I was a musician. And walking down the hall of the Naval School of Music, I overheard a gunnery sergeant, E7,
I believe.
Yes, yeah, 7, sorry. I can't believe that it even took me a moment to think about it. E7 was what popped in my head, but I was doubting myself.
Don't doubt yourself. Confidence. Keep going.
That's true. So, translating for non-Marines, E7, this gunnery sergeant said to the warrant officer 5, "Raw, sir," and I could not believe, like, in boot camp, it's good morning, sir. Good afternoon, sir. You might, like, after boot camp, it's understood you're allowed to venture as far as like oorah, sir, or oorah, gunnery sergeant, if you're, you know, low private first class, lance corporal, whatever. But I was taken aback, and I was like, what? That is not how I was taught to behave in boot camp. And that the fact of the matter is that my boot camp experience was not representative of the current Marine Corps experience.
No one's boot camp experience is relevant to what they're coming into, because they train you in a different way.
Yeah.
And then when you get out to where the work is actually taking place, you'll find that it's a completely different world.
That actually, sorry, I'm talking a lot. I do that. That reminds me of LDS missionaries. I went on a mission teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ for 2 years, and there's a movie that exists called The Best 2 Years about an LDS missionary in Denmark. Yeah, Denmark?
I don't know. I don't know much about the Nordic countries.
It's not Denmark. It's the Netherlands. And so you go to the missionary training center for, let's say, 2 months. It depends on your language that you're learning. If you're learning Russian, it's probably going to be 3 months. For me, it was 2 months because I was learning Spanish. Anyway, so this missionary arrives in the Netherlands, and he's trying to speak Dutch with people, and his companion has a brief conversation with one of the locals, and the new missionary turns to his companion afterwards, like, "What language was that?" And he's from Oklahoma. He's like, "What language was that?" Said, "Oh, that was Dutch." He's like, "Oh, then I'm in trouble, because that is not what they taught me at the MTC.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, coming out of boot camp, it's a training environment, and they're trying to lay a foundation.
They deconstruct you as a civilian and reconstruct you into the mold of what they want. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole one of the big purposes of basic training, is to do that reconstruction so that you are not a civilian anymore.
Yeah. I'll take a moment for our listeners and viewers. I wrote down a few things, like topics to hit on. Like, here we are at 20 Books Vegas. This is Terry Mixon. Tell us about your background. What do you write? We're about to get to where can we find your work? But I actually left space to let the conversation flow. And I thought we were going to be talking about conference takeaways, and we probably will. But I think this is a great thing. This will be interesting for listeners. And for your information, my target audience for the podcast is anybody. It's not aimed at other writers.
Well, then you're in a target-rich environment.
Yeah, because it's anybody. But I think it's interesting. And you mentioned Battleship, the movie Battleship. That was obviously done with a hearty amount of military consultation, because the uniforms were current naval uniforms of the day. There were lots of technical things that you would need to have somebody with a military background in order to get right. But then, and this is what kind of I fight with myself, they took that and then they chopped it up whenever they felt like it.
Exactly. That's how they do it in movies.
So the museum ship. Okay, yes, it's there. It's a real ship. It's actually a museum. But in the movie, of course, it has fuel. And the engines
run. They work. They start right up.
They start right up. And maybe that would be the case. Maybe they keep it ready to go.
I'm betting not.
But they would not leave it loaded with artillery. Like, those shells would not be there. There might be some historic shells, but they would empty them out. They would not have any explosives in them.
And I made a big point when I started The Last Hunter of having an engineering crew there that was active duty, that the ship, while it was a museum, was still on the active rolls. Mm. Even though it's not been maintained, everything is falling apart, the engineer has kept the engines working.
Yeah.
So I had a way to move the ship and at least give it a little plausibility to being able to be used.
Well, and that might very well be the case. But is it the USS Missouri that's in Pearl Harbor?
Think it is, but I don't know for sure.
I could see that. I mean, I'm just unaware of the specifics of the current condition of the USS Missouri. But I could definitely see that. I would not be surprised in the slightest that they keep the engines in working condition. Because maybe they would have to move it.
One of the big things with that particular series was it took them 2-3 books to get even a reasonable percentage of their old weapons functional.
And which what's the series called again?
The Last Hunter.
The Last Hunter. And where do we find it? Where
can you we can find it on Amazon, where all my books are at.
Okay.
I'm Amazon exclusive.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you do have your own site. It's
terrymixon.com.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And it's got links that go right back to Amazon.
And that's so I'm going to right here, like I should be holding terrymixon.com. If I remember to edit this in here.
That was one of the funnest parts of that first book, was the horse trading and various shenanigans they had to get even some of the parts and pieces they needed to get that ship able to go when the initial invasion happened,
mm-hmm.
to try to just get it out of orbit, get it into space, get it doing things. And so that was a lot of fun to write that.
I'm just going to make sure the audio is still rolling.
Yeah, that would be very good if the audio was still rolling.
So the screensaver had turned on. So, all right. Yeah, it sounds interesting. Do you mind if we go ahead and talk about conference takeaways?
Sure, let's do it.
What's one for you? What have you taken?
The biggest takeaway I have from this conference is that this is your one chance to be in an environment with thousands of other writers that you can talk to, that you can network with, that you can ask questions of, and that you can form relationships that are going to help you further down the line.
And I have done a lot of networking myself. That's and I have farmed the conference for podcast guests. I got a lot of business cards, sent a few emails on the spot just to establish contact. So we should have a good roster of interviews in the coming weeks and months. So another takeaway is, I mean, just learning the business of publishing, I guess. And I went to some craft sessions as well. But as far as like the business of it, as of today, because it was after midnight, as of today, you can find as a serial fiction, my Nightshade Unicorn story. You can find the first chapter right now in Kindle Vella. And so like I took a moment and I spoke with Craig Martell, who has been basically running these conferences. He's stepping down and it won't be 20 books next year. It'll be Author Nation next year. I took a moment to ask him like, hey, what would you suggest, strategy wise and financial strategy wise? So I talked to him about where I am with Nightshade and Unicorn, where I have a manuscript, and I just finished my first pass through it to get rid of, dictation artifacts.
You're a dictator like me.
Yeah. So I just finished my first pass through it, to do that. And it still needs some massaging. The book does. And I, after talking to him and then sitting in the final, watching the final panel at the end of the conference, I decided, okay, what I'm doing is I'm going to serialize it starting immediately. And I did, like, I up in my hotel room last night, I started serializing it. And then I set a release date. So I guess I'm announcing that right now. Unless things go wrong, because this is my first time publishing a book. The release date for Nightshade Unicorn Forerunner, which is book one in the series, will be February 28th, 2024. Sorry, I didn't mean to steal a fun.
No.
It came up.
No, that's great news.
So
publishing your first book is real important.
Yeah. And because of rules with Kindle Vella, that means that I have to finish serializing it at least 30 days before. So yeah, I'll serialize it, over the next couple of months, and then I'll publish the book. And while I'm serializing, I'm going to be writing book two. I'm hoping to start dictating book two on my drive home, which I will start this evening and get home Monday evening. Also I need cover art, you know, so that's another point of networking. I spoke to artists. That's not what I meant to say, but that is true. I spoke to artists. And we will communicate further to see if they are an aesthetic match for what I'm looking for, and if I wish to meet their price point. What I meant to say, though, was that I spoke to authors whose covers I liked, and I said, "Who is your artist? Who drew that for you?" So yeah, I'm getting the ball rolling on purchasing some cover art for Nightshade Unicorn. In the meanwhile, the serial is using an AI generated image.
This interview is
No, I'm glad for AI in this case. Like, I am definitely going to hire art for this book. But the AI lets me have an image that I can work with right now. And so that's really fortunate in my opinion.
With my first book, I went to stock art sites and found a decent image that I could use for the first book in the series. And that helped me get off the ground.
I considered stock art, but you can't find stock art of a, what's the word, of an intimidating black unicorn.
That would be more problematic.
Yeah. I need an intimidating black unicorn on my cover.
Yeah, that is a challenge, I'll grant you.
Yeah. What's another takeaway that you got?
Well, before we go to another takeaway, I want to ask a question to you about your dictation. What do you use?
Mostly Microsoft Word.
Okay.
I also see Microsoft Word has some drawbacks. It irks me that it stops listening after about 10 seconds without dictation.
Yeah, that would be very problematic.
And so if you take a moment to think, which I do frequently, it stops and you have to start it again. There's a keyboard shortcut, at least, which I learned after having to go and use the mouse. Like, as somebody who likes to use computers very quickly, and I use all the keyboard shortcuts I know to flip back and forth between windows, every time you reach for the mouse, you slow yourself down. And whether your hands are on the keyboard or not, every time you reach for the mouse, you're slowing down time a little bit. Unless you're just really good and precise by nature, and I'm not. So the button to begin dictation isn't that big. And so, and like if you go and click it, in the act of doing that, you move the mouse. So the next time you have to click it again, you have to move the mouse back to where the button is.
Yikes.
I have a drawing monitor. What's it called? It's
one of the drawing pads.
Yeah, a drawing tablet. That's what it's called. It's a monitor that has a pen for input, but it has some programmable buttons on the side. And I got a treadmill off of Facebook Marketplace for $80, and it barely fits in my basement office, but it works and it's helpful. So I take the drawing tablet and I put it on the treadmill's thing where you would put a book, and I can see Microsoft Word right there, and I put the microphone on a shelf behind the treadmill, and as I'm walking along, and if I take a moment and it stops dictating, I programmed one of the buttons on the monitor to that shortcut, so I can start and stop dictation with a single click. It was helpful.
Is it very accurate?
It's pretty good. Except for fantasy names.
I was going to say, with fantasy names, that seems like that would be problematic.
Yeah. And anybody who's listened to me in the past few weeks already knows that I have substituted words. So in Nightshade Unicorn, there's no state of Alabama. But the main character's name, Alabva, is not something Microsoft Word will recognize. So I say Alabama. And then later I control F and find and replace. So yeah, Alabva is Alabama, and Haranamon is honeymoon, and Sakala is sockeye. Because I don't really talk about different breeds of salmon.
Wow, I would totally lose my mind trying to remember everybody's shortcut name.
Yeah, that has been, that's a difficulty.
I did invest years ago in Dragon Naturally Speaking, and I've updated it over the years, and it's pretty good at you programming in different names and getting the spelling right. It's pricey, but it was one of the best investments I made for dictating.
Well, now,
out of 40 books that I've written, I would estimate 30 of them have had their first drafts narrated, dictated by me through Dragon.
I missed the chance earlier when you first said that you wrote 40 books right after I mentioned that we're at 20 books in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
So is that 40 books to 100K?
You know, it's 40 books to significantly more than 100K.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So it works.
It does work. It really does. Long series are king.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was going to ask. So you only have two series?
Oh, no. I've got other series that I've got. If I had to break it down, I've got Empire of Bones that has 14 books. 15th book is written, and I just have to go through the editing process to make it happen. Last Hunter has 11 books currently out in it. I've got 4 books in the Humanity Unlimited saga that I've written, 3 books in Imperial Marines, and 2 singletons that didn't warrant going to further books in the series.
What is Humanity Unlimited? Is that enhanced?
It's more like Stargate.
Okay.
Type stuff with aliens and strange humans mixing it up on Earth.
Okay.
Much more near-term science fiction than what I've written before.
Back to dictation. Another thing that I have used is called
I co-wrote 5 books with Glenn Stewart. So those are the other ones. Yeah.
Okay. Another dictation tool that I've used is Lily Speech. I think it's Lily, not Libby. But if Lily doesn't come up, then it's Libby. Lily Speech, which is, it runs off of Google's speech to text engine, and it does not stop listening unless you tell it to.
Neither does Dragon. And it also has a program called Dragon Anywhere that you can pay the monthly fee for it to do. Send voice recognition over a connection out to the internet. I've never used it. Since we're talking about it, I should mention that they have that option. I prefer doing it at my computer. It's too noisy of an environment to do walking and doing other stuff.
As I drive home, I want to dictate. I'll just be recording it, and then I'll use either Microsoft Word for the web or Descript to transcribe it.
And it can go ahead and take that incoming file and run it through the mill and spit out the words for you?
Yeah.
Good deal. Dragon can do that as well. I've noticed that it's not as accurate as when I'm just doing it myself.
Yeah. It'll take more cleanup on the back end because if I'm watching it, maybe I shouldn't watch it. But what if I'm watching it and I see a mess up, then I often go back and fix it.
I don't watch it anymore. I have my monitor going, but I slide my chair back far enough so that my Bluetooth headphone still works, and I can see that it's still doing stuff. I can't read the words.
Is Dragon good at punctuation?
Yes.
Microsoft Word is not that great at punctuation.
Well, I dictate my own punctuation.
I do that. And if I'm not watching it, I sometimes forget to punctuate. I forget
Dragon
to
is,
close quote and...
Dragon's really good with interpreting the punctuation that I say and putting it where I want it.
Okay. Cool. What else? What else do you take away?
From here, the biggest takeaway that I have is you have to take everything that you've learned from wherever you learn it, pick out the pieces that are most important to you, and actually implement them. So many people that go to conferences, get good advice, that they make good notes, they do that, and then nothing happens. They don't actually implement the things that they've learned.
Yeah.
Even if it's only just some minor change or one good idea that you think would be good. If you go to a conference and you pull away a couple of things that makes your writing or your publishing better, then you have paid for that conference. If you don't put it into practice, all you're doing is socializing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I'm going to give myself a good grade here because I haven't gone home yet and I'm already...
You still have time.
I haven't gone home yet and I'm already implementing, you know, I threw the thing on Vela and because Russell Nolte was in a panel and no, that was something different. Who did I talk to about Vela? But basically, why not? I talked to Craig Martell about it, And I was like, I mean, I don't see any reason not to serialize it for now.
In the Litter PG world, a lot of the people that are writing books in that, they'll publish it on Vella, but they'll publish it on a site called Royal Road, which is a free site. And as the books are ready to come down, they'll take all of it down and then publish it. They'll also use Patreon. So if you really want to pay money to get further ahead, you can get however many chapters further ahead of what you're doing by going to Patreon.
You just reminded me. Since I'm moving into being live, like being out there, really, I need to work on my ecosystem. Because I want to do subscriptions. I messed up setting up my Ream account, and I need them to reset it for me. So I'm waiting for them to do that again. My fault. So I can get started there. And I have a Patreon. I have a Ko-fi, and I have a Substack. But I need to figure out exactly what I'm doing with all these different platforms. And
you need a cohesive and a comprehensive plan.
Yes. And I think I took one step in that direction before the conference, in making my little business card.
Mm-hmm.
So this is NFC enabled. So if you tap your phone on it, then
that's pretty spicy.
It pops up my contacts in so you can save it to your phone, but that doesn't always work for everybody. So there's a QR code on the back, and the QR code leads to my digital contact card, right? These are kind of like dot cards, except it's not a dot card. I ordered blank NFC cards and some blank sticker labels and did the rest myself. And so that digital contact card is... like it has my picture and it has my pen name and it has links. So it's a centralized location for me. It's not complete yet.
Right.
You know? And I haven't figured out what I'm doing with the subscription platforms. So
I've kind of crippled my own. I used to do all of my stuff on Patreon before I published it, more as accountability for me, because I'm more likely to produce things quickly if I've got an audience that is paying for the privilege of seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm co-writing, I can't put those chapters out there. So I can write my own stuff, but it's more like a chapter a week rather than something more frequent than that. And I occasionally feel bad about that.
Maybe you could... No, I don't know. That's something to think about. Start a company with your co-author and I don't know, somehow split the proceeds. But then now we're talking about setting up a whole other
added Patreon. Complication may not be worthwhile on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as far as that, the co-author, I'm the junior partner in that. He's the one that has the say.
Okay. Yeah. What else did you take away this week?
That's it for me. I'm sure there's other things in my head.
Yeah.
What about for yourself?
A lot of networking, a lot of upcoming podcast guests, but not only that, but people to reach out to. There was somebody I talked to who has a subscriber list, an email, a newsletter subscriber list of 30,000. Mine, I think, is at 11 now.
11 or 11,000?
11 individual.
Okay, I was going to say 11,000 is pretty good.
Because I haven't pushed it yet. I haven't pushed it. But I asked her, like, can you help me? How do I build this? So I'm going to be talking with her. And
is this the newsletter ninja?
Tammy? No, just somebody else that I found myself next to in a session that we both attended. And
there's a couple of books on Amazon called Newsletter Ninja. And there's a lot of very good basic advice on newsletters in those. So I would recommend that to you. Okay. Tammy is the one that does it. And if I try to pronounce her last name, I will massacre it. So I'm not going to try to do it. Tammy something. I'll look it up because I don't want to massacre somebody's name because that's all.
And I mentioned earlier that I had a financial strategy question for Craig Martell. And that was about editing because I have, I'm leaving my day job without being published first. And so I'm cutting off my income, but I have some money in the bank. I could pay and run the gamut of editing, but at the same time, I'm still learning the craft, and it might not be worth it to me at this time to pay for full service edits. So he suggested I do pay for copy edits, and lean on beta readers for the developmental edits.
Keeps jumping to that. It obscures the name.
Okay.
But
okay.
Newsletter Ninja.
Cool.
It's a great book to go ahead and get some basic fundamental ideas on things that work with newsletters. In my books, when I started out, I read this before I started out.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think it. And I went ahead and put a link to my newsletter in the front matter, as well as being right at the back of the story, right after the end, basically. So my also bots in the newsletter are on the same page, front and back. And having it in those two places, I think has helped me accumulate people for the newsletter. They might not see it in the front. They might see it as soon as they finish reading the story and go, oh yeah, click right there on the spot. I like that guy. Let's go ahead and do that. And it bore fruit immediately with book one in that newsletter. So don't miss a beat there. Go ahead and put it
in
the front back.
I definitely need to be working on a following because I need a good launch, you know?
Let's see if I can pronounce her name.
I guess
it's terrible.
I need to remind myself I shouldn't stress too much about, I shouldn't stress at all about launching my first book. I should do what I can to make sure it's as good as it can be, good as I can make it, but.
That's why I wasn't wanting to, massacre any names. You can
Labrecque. I would say Labrecque.
Maybe, but I'm terrible with names to begin with, so I don't want to be massacring somebody's name right out of the bat.
Yeah. What was I just saying? Right. So launching my first book, I shouldn't stress about the launch going well. I should do the things that have been shown to work and then not worry about it and not stress about it.
And because, move on to book two.
Yep. Book two. Because they say a lot that
the best advertising for your book is to write
your next one. Yep.
It's true.
And they say as far as like running ads, paying for advertisements on Facebook or Amazon or Google. I've heard a couple of people. Did I hear it this week? I definitely heard it last year when I came. They say don't advertise until you have three books. And then when you have those three books in the series, you advertise the first one.
I know that the last part is true. When you're advertising, focus your attention on the first book in the series. Because that's where the entry points are. You got to focus your advertising on the entry points that readers are going to find for you. Mm-hmm. If you advertise book 10, that's probably not going to grab somebody.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Entry points. It's important. Okay. I think this has been a good conversation. We could probably wrap up unless you have. To remind our listeners, this is Terry Mixon. You can find him at terrymixon.com. You can also find his books on Amazon.
I'm the only Terry Mixon writing science fiction.
Yeah. Just search probably just for Mixon, and that would...
If you search for Terry Mixon, you'll find me.
Yeah. And I would remind our listeners and viewers about our Fantasty contest. We're coming to the last couple of weeks of the contest now. So take a picture of what you grew in your garden or that you cooked in your kitchen, and you can tweet it at me at Grand Hill Cron, and or you could email it at fantasty@thorn.link, or send it to me on Instagram as well. But send me those pictures, and Thanksgiving dinner counts. And this is good for a $35 gift certificate to the restaurant or retailer of your choice. And the contest closes November 30th. That will be the last day for submissions. And then we'll choose a winner in December and contact you to send your prize. So thank you. And thank you, Terry.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast.